Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Welcome to the Along Came a Writer Network. Opinions expressed in our shows do not necessarily reflect those of the network.
It's that time again, Geek Blockheads. Go ahead and save your progress on Zelda Wind Waker. And you know what? Actually, you can keep playing Zelda, and I will never, ever say that any other time on my show. You're going to have to shut down everything. You can't even shop on ThinkGeek, but I will let you play Zelda. And settle in for the Geek Block. I'm your host, Carla Hoke. My guest today is someone I can't believe I haven't had on the show. When someone has said something about, hey, if you hadn't had Nadine on the show, I'm like, sure, I've had her on the show. And I look back and I think, oh, no, I totally haven't had her on a show. There's been a few times I almost called her and thought, no, she hasn't been on here. I first heard her name through Steve Lobby. He and I were chatting at a writer's conference, and Nadine walked by, and he told me, he said, look out for that one. And if you know Steve Lobby, you know exactly that he leaned over, and he looked over the edge of his glasses, and he pointed. And he said that she was going to be a great author at that point. Her first book had not hit the market yet, but he had read it and absolutely loved it. And Steve's never wrong. That's just kind of how he works. He's on an always right kind of plane of existence. My guest today is award-winning author Nadine Brandis. How are you today, Nadine?
I'm doing great, Carla. I didn't know Steve said that to you.
Yes. You know what, Steve, for some reason, the two of us very much click. And anytime we're in the same place, we get together and we just chat. And he will look around the room and he'll point out people, hey, watch out for this one. She's going to be, never negatively, that one's going to be great. This one's got one coming out. Mm-hmm. And he tells me the dates of everything. But yes, he absolutely, and he even paused and gave me that side look. He has a side look that he gives. And he said, you know the one I'm talking about. He said, that one, she's going to be a good one. Her book coming out is fantastic. But okay. And so I wrote your name down. And here we are. I don't know how many years later. I'm finally coming through with it. Okay. The first thing I do is I ask the author, how can people find you on social media?
Well, if you search Nadine Brandis, you'll pretty much find me everywhere. So nadinebrandis.com is my website, and that has the link to all of my social media. But thankfully, I have a unique enough name where I don't have too many other Nadine Brandises vying for Twitter handle or Facebook handle. So, yeah, I'm usually mainly on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Those are my top three.
Yes, and I love your website. I don't know, are you in charge of that, or did you hand that off to someone else?
I'm in charge of that. I put it together when I first got my writing contract, and I think I was just fueled by excitement over my contract. So I braved the world of HTML and CSS.
Oh.
Ta-da!
It's painful. It is. Do you enjoy social media? I always ask the author that as well. The first two questions are always the same. Where can we find you, and do you enjoy it? And I'll tell you what, the do you enjoy it is split right down the middle. Do you enjoy social media?
I love it. I love social media because I love connecting with people and connecting with readers. And it took me a good year of figuring out how I could be just myself and let my dork out and just be real on social media. And once I got that, I think it kind of let people know, like, hey, I can be weird too. And so I have a lot of fun because it's just, to me, it's a friendship network. And I try not to let the word marketing freak me out or invade kind of the good vibes that we have on there. So I love it.
Well, like you, I'm an introvert. And I think sometimes people confuse what an introvert is. It is not a shy person. An introvert is someone who needs to be alone in order to refuel themselves. So do you ever get physically tired doing a lot of social media? Do you ever have to just say, okay, this is too people-y, I need to back away?
Yeah, I have a pretty good balance in that I really only let myself hop on there for an hour a day. And sometimes that hour is split up just because I know, like, I have a tendency to get overwhelmed with that, and then it can hinder me from being able to write and be creative because I'm so mentally drained just from being on there. So I enjoy it up until the end of an hour, and then usually I start getting tired. So I try to keep a good eye on how I'm doing with that so I can take a break and stay creative.
That is a very good idea. Do you actually set a timer or do you just kind of look at the clock?
No, I just kind of look at the clock. Usually it ends up being a little less than an hour because I have down my rhythm of, okay, I post this and then I post that and then I check on those comments and then I go to work. And it's the same rhythm every morning and comes out to be about 45 minutes to an hour. And then sometimes I hop back on in the evening just to catch up. I do. It took me a while, but I've got it down now. It makes me sound really organized, which I'm not, but.
I like to think of myself as organized. When I picture myself, I'm organized, but the truth is I'm super not organized. You are of the age, and I mentioned this to you earlier when we were messaging back and forth, it's conceivable because of your age that you had always had access to kind of computer techie kind of stuff. But when you started out writing, you started out, and you swear by it, by a fountain pen. Did you not?
Yes.
You love fountain pens. Why is that?
I do. Well, it wasn't just when I started out writing. When I started school in kindergarten, that is what we learned on. We learned on fountain pens.
Really?
I was in private school. Yeah, and I didn't realize how unusual that was, but my most vivid memories of kindergarten is learning penmanship and studying, like, how to hold your pen properly so that you don't get hand cramps and so that you can write nicely and what to do if the ink blotches and all of this stuff. But now that I'm older, I realize that's not normal. But that was how I learned to write. And so to me, it just made the art of writing a beautiful thing from the very start.
Do you think it helped you learn how to write to start out with a fountain pen?
I think so, just because it was delivered as a creative process instead of
something. Yeah, I would think the kids would think that's neat. Yeah, that's novel. Mm-hmm. I mean, kids can go home and grab pencils all day long, but that is really cool. And you learned how to draw up ink and everything?
Uh-huh. Yep.
Wow. Okay, well, do you still write very often by pen or are you all computer all the time?
I kind of go back and forth, but I enjoy by pen more. It kind of depends on where I'm at with deadlines. If I'm pretty tight, then I'll do it on the computer just because I have to be able to write faster. But when I have the time and the luxury of a longer deadline, then I usually write by hand, and I have notebooks that I write my stories in. And my dad got me this beautiful fountain pen as like a your first book is out gift, and so I always use that. And so I much prefer writing by hand, but it just depends on what time is allowing for.
You know, when I interviewed Thomas Locke, he said that he wrote his first draft out by hand, and I started laughing, and I didn't mean to laugh, but I said, is that an app or is that a real thing? And you know, he goes, no, I literally write it out. Okay, well, if you do have the opportunity to write it out by hand, what does that process look like? Are you kind of a vomited out first draft person, or do you write and then maybe cross out a line and then keep going, or how does that look on the page if you're writing it by hand?
Yeah, I edit a bit as I go. So, there are a lot of cross outs or inserted notes. I make sure not to write my lines too closely together because I am going to be changing things. And I try to plot a decent bit on the front end just so that it comes out cleaner. I can't turn out a nasty rough draft. Otherwise, I loathe the editing process. So I have to be able to enjoy the story as I'm writing it, and so I do tend to go back and tweak and edit and make notes as I go. So I plot and then make little notes in the margins while I'm writing by hand.
So you're not one of those people that just vomit it out to me. And if listeners, if you're wondering what we mean, explain to listeners what vomit it out means as far as writing.
That just means kind of throwing all the words on the page and getting your story from point A to point B, knowing where it needs to go, and then finishing it. And it's nasty. There's not great development or description. It's full of holes. And then you perfect it during the editing process. So
right. But that's not how you work with your first draft, correct?
Correct. I tried.
I don't
that
either. I'm so time. Glad to hear you say that.
Yeah, it doesn't work for me. I tried it with my third book because I was on such a tight deadline and everyone just kept saying, just get the first draft out and just write it down. And so I did it, and it was horrible. It was the worst editing and writing experience I've ever had with a book. And so I learned kind of the hard way that that is not my way of doing things.
You know, I was really interested to ask you a lot of these questions because some of the writers I've had on previously, when they do have a series of books, they wrote books prior to that series. So they kind of had their writing shtick down. But you're great to talk to about this because your first books were a whole series. And so I would imagine that between that first one and that third one, boy, that's a lot of quick growing up you have to do in the course of writing books. Did your process change a lot, or was it just kind of automatic and it's just maybe tweaked here and there?
No, it changed a lot. I took 3 years writing my first book because I didn't have a deadline, and then I got contracted. And at that point, I didn't even know if it was going to be a trilogy. I knew there was a second book, and I had an idea of what needed to happen in that second book. I had no idea how the story ended. And suddenly being contracted, I realized I had to have that stuff planned out. And I had to write faster because I was given about 8 months for book two and then 6 months for book three to write them. Yeah. So coming off of a 3 year writing stint, that was quite a shock to me. And I had to learn a lot as I went. So I turned to a lot of other authors who had been through that. Like Jill Williamson was really helpful. And John Hoddy and, you know, fellow authors from my publishing house. And they gave advice of, you know, plot it out or just get the words down. And they really helped me get through that. But after my third book, which just released in October, but I finished writing it almost a year before that because the publishing process takes a long time. I've just finished taking kind of a year off and re-examining plotting and re-examining the writing craft and finally getting my feet back under me and figuring out, okay, this is the process that works for me and this is how I can set myself up for success when it comes to deadlines and having to write fast. And yeah, so I had to grow a lot, and I've heard that happens to a lot of new authors who are excited. They sign that contract, and then suddenly they're under deadline, and they don't know how to handle it. And I was subject to that, but it was a good learning time, and I have a very gracious publisher. So all in all, I think my process went as well as it could have been with how ill-prepared I was, and I'm glad that I grew so much in the past several years.
So you did say that when you finished that first book, you didn't know how it was all going to end, correct?
Uh-huh.
Oh, thank you. I love hearing that.
You're wondering.
I love that. So to new authors who are writing books and they think, I don't know, maybe this is a series, they don't need to be stonewalled by the fact that they're not really sure how it ends. So they shouldn't let that allow them to keep them from presenting it to someone, correct?
Correct. I wouldn't let that stop you. I do think that it creates some extra roadblocks that you'll have to deal with in the future, but that's only natural. So I wouldn't let that stop you from writing, especially because if I had planned out the ending of the third book way back when I was writing the first book, I think it would have been a very different story. The story kind of grew with me as I was writing it, and then it allowed for a better ending than I think I could have planned when I was still young in my craft back with book one.
So did you decide on your own, hey, I think this is how it's going to end? Or did you have an editor or agent that said, you know what, this would kind of be cool? Was it all you, or was there a little input from other people who had read the first book?
It was all me, but I did sneakily ask questions from my readers.
Well, sure.
So when the second book released, I sent out a, what do you think is going to happen next, questionnaire to see what my readers
what Suckers, yeah.
So that I could know, oh, don't forget about that character because everyone expects the conclusion of that character, or I'd know what to avoid and what to do. And so I was a little sneaky, but for the most part, my husband is my soundboard, so he's the one who went through
fantastic.
The process of developing the ending with me, but I didn't really talk to anybody else.
That's fantastic. And I'm glad you were able to kind of get some feedback from readers because, you know, I think sometimes as writers, we get a little single-minded on things. And we don't realize that the characters that may be stuck with readers. The first thing I'm thinking of is Stranger Things. I don't know if you watched that series on Netflix. Did you happen to watch that?
I haven't, and I know that I'm a rebel for having not watched it. But
it's okay.
A little too high on the creep factor for me, so I'm not.
But you know what?
So I might just read spoilers.
Well, you know what? It's creepy. Have you seen the movie Pan's Labyrinth?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Well, as I say, it's a creep factor of Pan's Labyrinth. Okay. Yeah, it's the same. Okay. Well, there's one character in Stranger Things who dies. And it was never resolved. Well, she doesn't die. Okay. Fans, you know she's in the Upside Down. You know what that means. But it never resolved itself. And people went nuts at the end of the series. What about Barb? Barbara? What happened to Barb? And so when they wrote that first series, they didn't know anybody would want to see more. And so now they're like, oh, crud, what's happened to Barb? Now we got to figure out where Barb is. So it is great when you have fans because, you know, you wouldn't know that people actually connected with that girl that way. Okay, so from that first book to the third book, are you still, I believe you said you kind of plot. So you outline beforehand, correct?
Not really with those ones, though I've been plotting with all of my ideas since then.
Okay.
I used to, with this series, I knew what was going to happen, at least in book two, and I had it plotted in my mind, but I didn't really get into hardcore plotting. And I realized by the end of finishing book three that I wouldn't be able to do that again with future books. It barely worked for me by the end of the series. And, you know, maybe that's just because of how the story was or how my brain works.
Right.
But I've grown to desire plotting more. And so now I plot and it really works for me. But I didn't plot too much with those early books. However, I did have an idea of where I wanted them to begin and end and go from there.
What does plotting look like for you? Tell our listeners that.
Well, I am a hardcore believer of Randy Ingermanson's book called Write Your Novel Using the Snowflake Method.
Snowflaker, okay.
Yes, I am, which I resisted reading that book for years, and I couldn't even tell you why, but it just sounded unappealing to me, and I had this idea of what I thought it meant by plotting. But once I finally picked it up, it is a really good fit for me. It's not a good fit for everybody. I know some authors who don't use it, but it seems to be a good fit for people who consider themselves pantsers and people who consider themselves plotters. This is like a gap bridging book. So, I just start, the way it's broken down is you start with a one sentence concept of the story and you have to summarize the whole story in a sentence. And then you grow that to a paragraph and then you grow that into a one page summary. And you do that with both the plot and characters, bouncing back and forth between plot and characters until it's completely developed. So it has, I think, 9 or 10 stages, and I usually only go until stage 5 or so, and then I start writing the book. So it's nice because if you're a pantser, you could just go through plotting through stage 2 and then begin to write. Or if you're a hardcore plotter, you might go all the way through stage 10 and then write. And so it's a good balance, and it really works for me. It's the way my brain works. So that's what I use.
You know what? I resisted it too for a really long time, and I'm still having a hard time embracing it. Do you feel, and I've always said, the snowflake method is the guy that your parents have told you to date, and you won't for the simple fact that your parents told you to date him, but he's probably the best guy for you. Do you feel like you're writing more than you need to write when you use that method?
I do get to that point, but when I hit that point and I recognize it, then I just start writing my book.
Okay.
So, I don't follow it religiously. I follow bits and pieces that I like and that works for me. And so then I start writing when I think I'm ready to write. And that's what I like about it, in that I feel like I can stray from the path and still end up with a good book. So,
But you feel like at this point you've developed, hey, this is what my method is. I know how this works now. Or are you still kind of, I think this is how I am. I mean, are you pretty much decided on this is my method?
Yes. I've tried a lot of methods over the past couple years. and this is it. So I definitely feel like I'm there and I have my rhythm, and I'm excited about what that means for hopefully future books that come out faster than my previous series did.
I was going to say, now that you have your method down, that would cut off a good bit of time on the writing, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
Okay, good. It's good to hear that. I'm glad to hear that. Okay. Tell folks about the Out of Time series.
Okay, well, in a nutshell, it's a dystopian series, which means it's a little bit futuristic, about a society
right.
where everybody has a clock telling them exactly how long they have to live.
And I love that.
The main character, the story starts where the main character, she just has 1 year left to her life, and she realizes, I haven't done anything with my life yet. And so she spends that year kind of trying to find purpose, which, of course, leads her into a whole bunch of scrapes and illegal situations that gives her quite the story she didn't expect. So that's the story in a nutshell.
That is such, I love that idea. Because, you know, I personally don't want to know when I'm going to die. I'm not a control freak. I'm okay with Jesus having that stopwatch. I don't want to see it. But, you know, we would all live a little bit different if we had, you know, the stopwatch in our, and it's stressful. But I love that idea. I absolutely love it because there's stress added to it. And then there's it, just the concept. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Was there ever a point in the process of the series, no matter how much you loved it, no matter how much you enjoyed it, did you ever think, why did I not make this just one book? Why didn't I just have this poor little Miss Blackwater just get it all over with in the course of one book, time's up, thank you, the end? Was there ever a point where you just thought, I can't do any more of this?
Not really, probably because when I first started writing it, I actually thought it was going to be one book. I'm not going to tell you how the story differed in my mind at that time, but it
okay.
was a very different story. And so then when I got the contract, which I was contracted when Jeff Berkey was still the owner
right.
of Enclave, which was Marcher Lord Press back then. And he
right.
said, okay, so how many books is this going to be? Because I think it needs to be more than one. And, I don't know. Let me think about it. And so then that's when we ended up signing a 3-book contract, because I started to realize at the end of writing book one that the story was a lot larger than what I
right.
expected. And I think that translated into my delivery of Parvin, the main character, because she
right.
views it as kind of this small story that's just her story. And then by the end of the first book, she realizes it's much bigger than what she expected. So it was kind of interesting. I felt like both my main character and I kind of learned the same lesson at the same time. And because of that,
okay.
I was excited to tell the bigger story. And I never really got sick of it. Because this is a story of my heart, so I'm sure I'll probably get sick of future books that I write. But
right.
This one, once I figured out how it needed to end, I knew that it just wouldn't be complete until it went all that way.
How did you come up with the name Parvin Blackwater? That's a cool name. That's a super cool name.
Oh, I thank you. Well, I think people will be a little bummed in how I came up with it. I got her name from a street sign. So there's
nothing wrong with that.
I know. But it was funny because I had spent days looking through name books and like looking at baby names, because I'm very insistent on every name having a meaning to it.
Me
whether that's
too.
A meaning only.
Thank
I
you.
Know. You're welcome. Or whether it's a meaning that's actually associated with that name. And I couldn't find one that fit her, and it was driving me crazy. And at the time, I was commuting an hour every day for my internship to finish grad school. And I kept passing all these different street signs. And one day, I noticed Parvin Road. And there was this little voice in my head that said, that's her name. And I thought, no, it's not. That can't be her name. I don't even know if that is a name. And who knows what it means? It could mean anything. And so
right.
I really fought against it, but I liked the sound of the name, but
mm-hmm.
I had no idea what it meant. And so then when I got home, I looked up the meaning and I kind of broke it down. And the meaning is shared in book two, but it ended up being absolutely perfect for her character growth. And so that was definitely a God thing, even though it's sort of a silly story. saying I found it on a street sign. Like God had that kind of planned, and
I love that.
And thankfully, it was a name. Yeah, so I love the story behind her name, even though it's a little different than what we normally hear.
Well, I love it because a lot of what writers get, their ideas are just normal, everyday kind of things. They're not these mm-hmm. deep searches through books. Sometimes it is just a street sign. And I love Blackwater. There's a Blackwater River. I grew up near Blackwater River. And actually, my family name on my mother's side means dark water. Have you ever been to Blackwater River?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I drive over it. That's where I got her last name.
Oh, okay. Okay. I grew up near Blackwater River. There's a Blackwater River in Florida. And it's not black. It's more like really dark coffee. But yes, from a distance, it absolutely does look black. And oh my goodness, Nadine, we're running out of time. Okay, this is something I have to ask. This is jumping subjects. I know that you have a master's in speech language pathology. How does that affect you as a writer? Does it affect you in any way? Because I would think words, you would be very much into the way words sound, and how does it affect you? Does it?
Yeah, I think it does in ways that I don't always realize. One is in, yes, how words sound. But I studied, there's so much to speech therapy, and a lot of that
yes,
was studying
is.
Communication. So I think it yes. allows me to really think through what is the form of communication that each character uses and how is that different mm-hmm. from other characters. And it helps right. me analyze my characters better. And I also think that it allows me to set better goals for myself and for my writing, because I spent years of goal setting for different speech clients
right.
and right. helped me to be a bit more organized with benefits. And it's broadened my thinking a lot in how I deliver characters. And
I absolutely can see how it would. I have twins, and they had to be in speech therapy because they had developed, they didn't have a language, but they had a dialect, and we had to break them of their little dialect. And so I was around speech language, and it is more than just, can you pronounce a TH? Can you pronounce an F? Do you stutter? There is so much to it about the way you hear things and the way you see things in your head. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see where, I'm having to cross out so many questions. This isn't fair. Okay.
Oh, no.
We are running out of time. Okay. How long did you take off after you finished the Out of Time series? How long of a break did you give yourself?
I took off a year.
You took off a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you took off, that means you must have started something else. That was a trick question, and I lured you into it, and I'm sorry. So
yes,
are you,
were.
You working?
I saw where you were going.
So are you possibly working on anything else?
I am. I'm working on a couple different ideas, all of which I'm very, very excited about.
Good.
I can't give details yet, but I'm hoping that I'll have some news within the next couple months for my readers.
Wow, okay.
So I've been working on and plotting, and I feel like I'm in a really good place where I'm finally beginning to write. So hopefully
good.
I'll have some more information to share in the future.
Okay. So when you took that time off, was there ever a time where you absolutely did not write anything? Or did that physically hurt too much to not write?
No, I definitely took off some time without writing, and I spent a lot of time reading and just reading in the genre that I write, catching up on all
Thank
the
you.
Books to be aware of what's out there.
Right.
And that's inspiring the creative still. It's just not coming out in the form of writing a novel. So,
Right. You go through times where you think, okay, I need a break right now. But then you start kind of getting, you know how it is, you get the voices in your head, you get bombarded, and you think, okay, this has to get out of my system. So you physically, if those of you who are just getting into writing, if you have one of those days where you just feel like your chest is full and you think, okay, I need to talk to myself a lot, or just sit down and write. That's your sign. That's the official birth contractions. You need to sit down and write. Okay.
Yep.
I mean, would you agree? Isn't that kind of how it feels?
Yes, I completely agree.
All right. It is, okay, one more time before we finish up, to find Nadine Brandes on social media, spell your name for everybody.
N-A-D as in dog, I-N-E, and then Brandes is B as in boy, R-A-N-D-E-S.
Yes, and I'll go ahead and tell you folks, if you do misspell the last name, you're still going to find her, I promise. All right. It is a tradition on the geek block to end with some rapid fire questions. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, geek block listeners, you know that these generally have to do with the person's genre, but they can also just have to do with something that I know for a fact the author likes. And so here we go. Question one. Better Castle, Helm's Deep, Hyrule Castle, Zelda fans, or Howl's Moving Castle?
Howl's Moving Castle.
Oh, what a cool movie that is. Okay, in Guardians of the...
Geek.
Oh, I know you are. I know you and Jeff Gehrke both. You both need nerd t-shirts with his name on it. Okay, in Guardians of the Galaxy, Star-Lord's real name is Peter what?
Quill.
Yes, very good. Ding, ding, ding. In the movie Inception, how can you tell if you're caught in a dream?
Oh, my goodness. I should know this. If you're something's not real. I can't remember.
Remember, it's a little tiny thing you can keep in your pocket.
Oh, yeah. Your little token. That's not what it's called.
Yes. That little spinning top. I cannot tell you how many times I've been out doing something. I've looked at somebody. I say, if you got a spinning top, this can't be happening. All right. Super awesome and pretty stinking cute astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson had a really big problem with the boat sinking scene in the movie version of Titanic. What was the problem that Neil deGrasse had with the final scene when everybody's in the water of Titanic? What was his issue? Remember, he's an astrophysicist.
I have no idea.
He has something to do with stars.
I figured, and I was it the wrong constellation?
It was the wrong, yes, it was the wrong sky for that day. Can you imagine being that smart that you're sitting and watching a movie and the scene comes up and you point out and say, that's not how that constellation looked? He did. James Cameron actually used it from a different date, and he actually did a reflection. So he actually split the screen, and one side of the screen was a reflection on the other. And Neil deGrasse Tyson lost his stuff. He wrote James Cameron and said he absolutely had to fix that. And so for the second release of it, James Cameron had fixed the sky so that it corresponded with that date. How cool is that? Okay.
That's really cool.
That is really cool. I would love to know that kind of stuff in my head at all times. Last but not least, I always end the show with this question. Worst superpower, superhuman strength only while wearing a non-flattering swimsuit, or the ability to stop criminals only by spraying them as a skunk?
Probably the skunk.
Oh, I know. You know what? At some point, you can just be okay with yourself to say, yeah, the swimsuit does not look good on me. Deal with it. Look how strong I am. But the skunk, that requires a whole different kind of outfit. It does. All right.
Yes, it
Thank
does.
You
and
so... Go ahead.
Oh, I just said and confidence.
No kidding. That's a whole different level of confidence, too. And aim without looking. Thank you so much for being on the show. Can we have you back after you finish your super secret project that you'll tell us about in a couple months?
Of course. Please do.
Thank you so much. And that ends the show for us. Thank you for being on with us, Nadine.
Thanks for having me. Come find me online. All right.
Yes, Nadine Brandes, look her up. Her website is really cool. And I'm going to tell you what, if I find it easy to maneuver, it is officially easy to maneuver. That is us. That's it for us today on the Geek Block. If you would like me to edit your fight scenes, please contact me through Quill Pen Editorial. And in the meantime, head over to FightWrite, FightWrite.net. I took a little bit of time off during the holidays, went to a knife conference. I could not have looked more out of place in that conference if I had walked in wearing a banana costume, I promise you. But I had a ton of fun. So I will be getting back to FightWrite pretty soon. In the meantime, thank you so much for being with us. Thank you so much, Nadine. And folks, have an absolutely blessed and geeky day. Yeah.